Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of September. And we'll be talking about the Republican National Convention again this hour. We'll have a chance to analyze last night's speeches from Fred Thompson, Laura Bush, President Bush, Joe Lieberman. And we'll also talk about, and this is where the discussion continues to be centered, about the vice presidential pick, Governor Palin, who speaks tonight. Today's Washington Post is reporting that Sarah Palin was not subjected to a lengthy in-person background interview with the head of John McCain's vice presidential vetting team until last Wednesday in Arizona, the day before McCain asked her to be his running mate, and she didn't disclose the fact that her 17-year-old daughter was pregnant until that meeting. Some of the more interesting blogs today are saying that it's hard to tell what the future may hold for her unexpected national candidacy, but the travails of the Palin family probably seem very familiar to many average Americans, and it is this averageness that makes her such a politically promising running mate for John McCain and a dangerous opponent for Democrats. Well, welcome your phone calls. We already have many of them coming in, so feel free to take on whatever issue you would like, respond to the speeches, tell us your thoughts about Sarah Palin, which everybody still wants to talk about. And here is how you get a hold of us. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And just a reminder that through tomorrow, we are carrying On Point Live from the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. And then we're with you the second hour of our normal 9 to 11 to talk about Republican politics, presidential politics with you today and tomorrow. Our guest this hour is Professor Jeffrey Ladwig, assistant professor at the University of Connecticut in the Department of Political Science, teaches courses on the U.S. Congress and the American political economy, the presidency, American political parties, and did his, so many people have Wisconsin connections, he did his undergraduate work at UW-Madison. And thank you so much, Professor Ladwig, for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Kathleen. It's really a pleasure to be on air with you.
Yeah, it should be an interesting hour. Our phone lines are already jammed, which doesn't happen that often, but I have a feeling I know the direction of the calls. So let's start with what everybody's talking about, and it is Governor Palin. You know, I was wondering, as I listened to Lieberman last night, and as I listened to the very impressive Governor Tim Pawlenty, I'm reading today that Pawlenty actually was McCain's first choice, if not Lieberman. And I'm wondering if he's thinking today, actually, that maybe he should have gone another direction, or is this choice so energizing, the grassroots, the base of the Republican Party, and she's a person struggling with real life issues, that it's going to be a tremendous selection for him? What do you think?
Both, very clearly. I mean, it's obviously changed the dynamics of the race tremendously. Whether that dynamic is for the good of John McCain's campaign or not, that's really for time to tell. But it's definitely changed the dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Was his first choice Lieberman? I have two questions. What would have happened to this convention had Lieberman been selected? What would have happened if Pawlenty had been selected?
Yeah, it seems like either Lieberman or perhaps Tom Ridge were probably his top choice personally. From everything I gather, it would have been pretty much a nightmare at the convention if either one of those were picked. Even Lieberman's speech last night, you saw he came out to really tepid response. He was there to support John McCain and promote him, but nonetheless, they were kind of fearful of him. And this was just for a rally speech.
Mm-hmm. Poor Lieberman, I think probably everybody's going to be fearful of him now, right? I'm sure he's not going to have a lot of coffee with Democrats.
Yeah, the Democratic caucus for him might not be quite as friendly as it once had.
right. So who gave the most stirring speech last night? Who really moved the audience, do you think? Was it Thompson?
Well, certainly probably moved the audience, I would say, within the auditorium, and I would say Lieberman as a national message, speaking to the nation overall. I mean, having a Democrat that used to be a vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party, I would say nationally that was probably a more important speech than Thompson's. But in the House, obviously, Thompson's was rallied to much more so.
Right. Did Lieberman persuade the American public that we need national unity and this is the man, John McCain, to achieve national unity?
Did he succeed? Well, again, time will tell. He made a persuasive case, and what's interesting, though, again, is this dynamic between, I would say, the national election and inside the House. I mean, he's calling for a bipartisanship and a change in reform. That's what Lieberman said, you know, McCain wants to bring. And but it's, you know, been 8 years basically of Republican rule. So what is that change from? It's from themselves in many ways. So I would have to assume that there's a fair amount of cognitive dissonance within the room to, you know, accept and applaud that, but nonetheless, that's campaigning.
Mm-hmm. What about the issues that he brought up? He talked about George Washington and that we are living through George Washington's worst nightmare with excessive partisanship in this country. And then he brought up issues that McCain has been, you could use the term maverick on, the broken immigration system and global warming, and yet he's picked a vice presidential nominee. I'm not sure what her position is on immigration, but we don't know yet, I guess. Maybe we'll find out tonight. But certainly, it was interesting he picked those issues when on global warming, she seems to have a very different position. Are there too many messages coming from this convention and opposing messages?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest problem coming out of the convention for the Republicans, is that it doesn't seem to be, at least at this point, it doesn't seem to be pinpointing on a single message. I mean, one, it's changed from the message of experience that was kind of before the Palin pick to now it's maverick and reform after the Palin pick. And in addition, as I kind of alluded to before, the message is even in the House itself and what they're trying to turn into their campaign theme. It's a lot of different themes that don't necessarily go together very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that being said, I would also say with the Democratic convention, I don't think it was necessarily clear what the narrative arc of the whole convention was until it was over. You know, I think Senator Obama really brought that together, and you could see the whole package only once it was finished. It's like reading a novel and only reading the first chapter and making a judgment that on the book at that point.
Yeah.
So we'll need to see how the whole convention plays out for the Republicans. But mm-hmm. at this point, I would say there's some schizophrenia there.
Mm-hmm. In proving that we love our soap operas and love papers, although they may be doing good journalism now, who knows, the National Enquirer, we like gossip. I wonder how troubling it is to the Republicans, or if it just really makes them ready to get out and vote here, that the focus, and it continues today, I guarantee you our phone calls will probably go this direction, that the story that we're looking at now is the 17-year-old daughter who's pregnant. We're going to be looking at the boyfriend tonight, I'm sure, and be just as interested in that as in other substantive policy issues. We're looking at fishing permit violations and her husband and whether or not, you know, he was an active member of this Alaska Independence Party. Isn't that kind of strange when we should be focusing, you know, on Iraq, on the economy? What's going on with that?
Well, certainly, I would say, I mean, there's pluses and minuses for that for the Republicans at this point.
Right.
The pluses is that on the issues today, they don't have a lot of firm ground to campaign on. They can't really campaign much on the record of President Bush. I mean, he's obviously extremely unpopular. A lot of his policies are extremely unpopular. So that's not good ground to stand on for them. Thus, changing the subject to something else is good. Now, whether this is actually a benefit, though, you know, in terms of this particular image and these dynamics that are developing now is a good change or not, you know, getting off of policy is good, but whether this is, you know, the right direction for them to go on is a different question. And in terms of, in addition to that, it's really, I mean, it's amazing how much the media and the convention itself, and everyone's talking about Sarah Palin and not about McCain anymore.
Right.
It's really the Sarah Palin convention in many ways, which, I mean, again, we'll see how that plays out, but it's supposed to be about the main person, not the VP function.
Right. Do you see any signs that the Republicans are less than happy about this selection? Do you see, as the press is talking about some Sarah Palin-Thomas Eagleton comparisons, do you see that unfolding or not?
It certainly could. At this point, I don't think so. I think that in many ways, the Republican Party was relatively de-energized or very de-energized leading up to this convention, and having anything to rally around right now has really, it seems to me, really enthused the base and given them, in their minds, a shot at beating Obama. And at that point, I think any contradictions and these dilemmas and these issues that are popping up right now, they can kind of push to the side, at least for the moment, and try to rally themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thompson speech last night, going pretty hard against Obama, talking about him being the most liberal candidate the Democrats have given the country, the most inexperienced candidate the Democrats have given the country. Was he hard enough on Obama to rally the Republicans?
Well, to rally Republicans, I don't think that was, you know, a very difficult task.
Right.
In terms of the particular charges, I don't think that's necessarily true. Certainly in terms of Obama, certainly not the most liberal member that the Democratic Party has put up, and he's certainly not the most liberal member of the Senate. He's relatively moderate, according to most measures. But with that being said, you know, that's campaigning. That's what they're going to say, and that's how they want to frame the debate.
Mm-hmm.
It's tried and true tactics.
Mm-hmm. And what about those lines that he used? I'm not sure why he uses, how this works, when he was talking about what a troublemaker that McCain was in high school and in college, and a real troublemaker. Do you think he went over the line with that, or do we like that? It was strange, wasn't it?
It really was. I was watching it and trying to do some other work at the same time, and my head just really popped up at that moment. Like, what is he talking about?
I know.
It didn't seem to be on message. I mean, I understand that he's trying to tie this into, like, I guess a maverick reformer since, you know, grade school or something. I'm not sure. But it was a little odd, yeah.
And certainly we saw the direction, and I'm sure there will be more ads that talk about what a war hero, and you can't deny the
certainly,
fact that he lived through and almost died as a result of being a POW. Is that effective for the Republicans? Is that was a very strong, it's been John McCain's strong identity for years and years now, and that was really brought home again by Fred Thompson. Is that who we vote for? Are we voting now for the strength of this man, and that will be their most effective message during the remainder of this campaign?
Yes. I don't think they have a lot of policy positions in particular to run on at the moment, and thus biography, character should be the number one issues. And those are often, you know, issues that are highlighted by the Republican parties. I mean, the Republicans are in kind of an odd situation oftentimes in that they run on a position of less government, but they're running, you know, to run the government itself. So it's always, I would say, you know, that kind of dichotomy has been a bit problematic for them, and they often then turn to the issues of character and honesty, integrity, whatever it might be. And they've been very successful at that.
Mm-hmm. And certainly you could say the Democrats have run on the biography issue or made that a part of their campaign this go around as well.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to be frank, I mean, you know, many Americans know, you know, not a terribly a lot about public policy, and it's not as exciting as, you know, some of these other issues. So elections often turn on those types of questions. For the good or bad, you know, that's a different debate, but they often turn on those issues. So that's solid ground for the Republicans to go to, absolutely.
Right. And what about the issue? I need to bring this up because I'm hearing it from people I know. It's what some of what people are talking about is the issue of whether or not a woman should stay home with a young baby. And how is that particular issue at one time called mommy wars playing out, or do you think that it's not a substantial issue?
My guess, and this is just a guess, is that it probably won't be as substantial of an issue. I mean, so many American families are dealing with exactly that same dilemma, you know, work and family,
right.
And whether it's the mom or the father, you know, typically, obviously, that's, you know, numerically, that's typically the mother having to, you know, the burden, most of those burdens. But that's, I mean, there's so many families that deal with that. In that way, again, the Palin-Pig really hits, you know, kind of a core American issue that could be very advantageous for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. I must say, and this is just personal, it must be very hard for the young daughter, and I guess her boyfriend's going to be there tonight as well, to be on a national stage. Maybe I'm just, you know, thinking back when I was 17, which was a heck of a long time ago now, but on some level, don't you think it's going to be hard for those young people?
Oh, it's got to be extremely hard, but at the same time, I'm sure extremely exciting. You know, who doesn't want to be a movie star when they were 17? And, you know, now they all are, basically. So.
Right. All right, let's welcome phone calls. We have a full bank of phone lines going, so here's the number if you want to call us as soon as somebody has had their time on the air. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guest, as we talk about last night's speeches at the Republican National Convention and look forward to tonight, is Professor Jeffrey Ladwig, assistant professor at the University of Connecticut in the Department of Political Science, teaching courses on the U.S. Congress, President, See, and American political economy and political parties. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is The Ideas. Oh, the email, too, is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. You're listening to The Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls now for Professor Jeffrey Ladwig, starting with Pat from Chicago. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I was wondering if it has been evaluated, and I'm sure it hasn't, how far right-wing, how radical right-wing is the new VP nomination? And specifically, you know, issues that sometimes don't get talked about enough, like many people in the anti-abortion community feel that birth control pills are abortion themselves and should be made illegal. Is that her position? I've heard some bloggers accuse her of that, but I've never seen anything. Do either of you know if that is indeed her position? Will she be fostering ideas like that?
From what I've read, she is not anti-contraceptive. Do you agree with that? Is that what you've read?
That's what I've read. Again, like most people, I really don't know, but that's exactly what I've read.
Anti-contraceptive, do you mean pills or barrier?
I don't know. I haven't heard her speak to that.
Yeah, and will that be explored?
Professor Ladwig?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are all issues and I'm sure the Democrats are going to be bringing up and pressing her on, and the press will too. I mean, one of the interesting dynamics about this pick is that, I mean, obviously people are extremely interested one way or the other in her pick.
Oh, you can say that again.
Follow it.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think all these questions will be asked, and it's all new material for everybody, basically.
And thanks very much for the call. We go to Mike next from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Just a few quick comments. First of all, I think the selection of her was brilliant. I really don't know if they thought it out completely, but I think it has the Democrats completely befuddled, and I'll tell you why. I'm an independent. I've been looking at both camps to see, you know, where am I going to cast my vote. And with her selection, it's a breath of fresh air. It's not this monotonous thing that is just hammered at constantly. You know, it's something different. It's something new. But more than anything, it's somebody that we can, you know, the general population can identify with. She's a woman. She's pretty. She has family problems. You know, we all identify with that. You look at the other candidates and, you know, I mean, they live like in a different world. Here's somebody that we can actually say, hey, that's just like the lady down the street. And I think the more the media beats her up, and, you know, I mean, the Chris Matthews and the Keith Olbermans of the world were disgusting, the more they beat her up, the more harm they're doing to themselves, and I think they're so stupid they don't realize it.
Let's talk about this average person. There are those who would say, Mike, that you don't need the person down the street to be in the vice presidency. You do need somebody who can deal with a larger world. How does being an average person that we can identify with help you in the role, in the international role that's required of a vice president and potentially a president?
Well, I think that her speech tonight is key. In other words, she has this overwhelming support right now. She's got to come through tonight, and she's got to she's got to knock it out of the ballpark as far as her speech. And then her debate with Biden is absolutely vital. And I think she's a tough cookie. I think she'll do fine. And, you know, people aren't stupid. You know, they're going to say, okay, she doesn't have any international experience, but she's going to surround herself with people who do.
Okay.
And against that common person type of aura that she projects, the Democrats can't do anything.
Professor Ladwig.
I think she probably will be a tough cookie. I think she'll probably perform quite well tonight. She's obviously, you know, a good speaker in the debates against Senator Biden. She'll probably fare well as well. I would assume so. And it's everything in between. I would say that, you know, the kind of the off-guarded moments that will kind of determine a lot of the perceptions of her and how she's framed in terms of being, you know, an average person, again, I agree with you that there's a lot of cachet there, that she can identify with a lot of people, and that's something that the Democrats ought not to overlook or minimize in terms of her appeal.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I also think there's obviously a huge risk there. You know, you don't want, you know, an average person might be able to relate to you know, an average person candidate like Sarah Palin was described by the caller, might be able to relate to people well. But at the same time, you need to have a certain level of expertise in order to do the jobs. You know, you don't want the average person building a bridge or performing brain surgery on you. You probably don't want the average person to be president or vice president either.
What does she have to address tonight? Is it the major issues? Is it foreign policy and global warming and the war in Iraq and all of those big issues, the economy? Is that what she needs to take on?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be obviously an incredibly watched and dissected speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, she needs to basically be able to define herself in terms of, you know, as a person, where she wants to be, her experience, and then her positions, most importantly, on foreign policy. I'm sure in the speech that, you know, will be written for her, she'll help write, however it may be, I'm sure it'll be very good and will define these points and it'll line up with Senator McCain's quite well. And certainly, I mean, what's clear coming out of the convention already is that the main reason for her pick is that she reinforces this maverick reform image. So just reiterating those points. Whether that stands the test of scrutiny in terms of whether she actually is or not is again, a second question. But at least rhetorically tonight, I think that's the main theme she's going to be hitting on.
I was interested in David Brooks, who was on NPR yesterday, who was saying he believed the main reason she was picked is, and I would imagine that considering his prominence, he probably has access to some of these numbers or knows people who do, that the internal polls in the Republican Party were showing that Senator McCain was in trouble in this election and he simply had to pick somebody who would shake things up and reach out to a base who would support the vice presidential choice, and that was the conservative base.
Yeah, I would say three main factors, you know, that led into that or lead to that. One, it's just obviously the energy of the Democratic Party and the mass mobilization that the Obama campaign has been able to accomplish at this point. For the Republicans, that's got to be scary.
Right.
Second, after the convention, the consolidation around Barack Obama and Hillary and Bill really coming to his side. Again, that's a consolidation. There's no major fractures then in the Democratic Party. Over and above that, I would say that the numbers, you know, at this point, all point towards an Obama victory. Some of the simplest models out there are basic economic models that can predict, that have been very successful in voting, predicting vote choice. And those right now are saying that Senator McCain should get about 48% of the two-party vote, leaving Obama with 52 and obviously the victory. Those models have been very successful in the past. And so I would say those three things all pointed to a bad outcome for Senator McCain, and, you know, he needed to do something to shake up the race, and he did.
So that gives him how many more percentage points, do you think, the choice of Palin?
Who knows? I mean, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That's, in many ways, in some ways, I would say the voter models in this election, the old ones, might just be thrown out the window. With an African-American candidate and with a woman candidate, both on the tickets. I mean, it's really in the dynamics of this race, a president that's so unpopular, it really might be a unique, you know, in many ways, a very unique election in American,
right.
American history.
Already has been, sir.
Radical statement by me.
Let's go to an email. We should not be discussing a 17-year-old making a bad decision when the issues facing us as a country are so serious and so devastating for future generations. We have allowed the Republicans to take over the discussion too many times, abortion, patriotism, religion. We need to talk about the economy, health care, fair pay, and the disasters of Katrina relief and the terrible war. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, as a political scientist, I couldn't agree more. Of course we should be talking about the issues more. One of the contradictions is that with McCain campaign really focusing on kind of character and personality of him, of course, but then by consequence her, it brings up these issues. And then, you know, even if they're not appropriate for discussion or not valid, they nonetheless kind of redirect a lot of the debate or thought, at least in that direction. And that's disturbing on both a kind of a democratic theory point of view, because obviously the policy issues are the most important things that we should be voting on, and, you know, who's going to present the best interest for us. And also questions of you know, how involved families should be looked at or examined in any kind of campaign, which probably is not a very relevant point.
Mm-hmm. And we thank you, Annie from Milwaukee, for that email. We go to Terrence from Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Terrence.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
My call. My comment is this. About 20 years ago, I sat in a fundamentalist church with my grandmother after an election where the Republicans had lost, and I saw myself as a conservative Republican. And the minister said that we are going to take and move into politics. We are going to take over the politics of this country. Now, for your listeners who do not understand religious fundamentalism, I just want to make it clear. These are people who believe that every single word in the Bible is the word of God. That means there was a Noah's Ark. That means that the world was created in 7 days. That's why we have intelligent design. Now, I can look at the Republican Party now and say that the Republican Party is the party of fundamentalist Christians. And even though there's 11 holy books floating around the world, they want to believe in the one holy book that was just down the street from theirs. And if you look at the political issues, abortion, if you look at gays, go to Leviticus. But they don't read all of Leviticus. They just take the one part. So I would say to your listeners, if you want to be a Republican at this point in the game, you could go to any fundamentalist church, listen to the minister on Sunday morning, and whether it's Israel, why are we in Iraq? They'll tell you, we're in Iraq to protect Israel. They'll just go to a church. They'll tell you right on the pulpit every morning, what is the issue of abortion? They'll tell you the issue. What is the issue on health care? What is the issue on everything? They will tell you. These are all fundamentalist Bible views.
But you wouldn't describe McCain that way, would you, Terrence?
I would say that McCain is not that way, and I think he is a legitimate war hero. However, when we're talking about his character the other night, they didn't mention the fact that he had numerous affairs while he was married to his first wife. He called that a disaster. Well, my wife would say that if I had a slew of affairs, that my character wasn't very high. So, you know, I don't think McCain cares one bit, but he was forced, in my opinion, by the Republican Party, who has to have a running mate. That's why the other candidates, even though more qualified, were ruled out.
Okay. Professor Ludwig.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, there's no question that social conservatives in the Republican Party is the dominant part of their organization. And that many of those are certainly evangelicals. Now, with that being said, and Palin's pick certainly speaks to those individuals, those groups of people that McCain himself has been having an extremely hard time connecting with. And by all accounts, you know, the social conservatives are thrilled with the Palin pick. I saw some reporting last night and early this morning about some comments she had made, actually, that talked about the war in Iraq in terms of a godly mission and other things like that. That certainly could be questioned and I think will be. The problem, campaign-wise, for the Democrats is that's not really a terribly good issue to run against, per se. I mean, certainly, separation of church and state is fine, but I mean, how do you pose that? Pose that in a way that still respects religion, as they certainly do and certainly want to, but also makes the point about the separation of church and state. It's a tricky issue, I would say, for them and for the Democrats on the campaign trail. But there will be a number of questions asked of Palin about these issues.
Our guest is Professor Jeffrey Ladwig. He's assistant professor at the University of Connecticut Department of Political Science. And we're talking about last night's Republican convention and, of course, still a whole lot of conversation and interest in Governor Sarah Palin, who will be speaking tonight. And you can be darn sure we'll talk about that tomorrow during this hour. Thanks, Terrence, for your call. We go to Bob from Nina next. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Actually, I'm in Oshkosh now. First of all, I believe that the Republicans have thrown family values right out the window. Second, that in Wisconsin, if you, if an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old male knocks up a 17-year-old girl, 16, 17-year-old girl, that's considered statutory rape. Now, Alaska, it might be different, and if that's the case, are they going to, is she going to impose or recommend that the rest of the nation go by what Alaska does as far as statutory rape goes? That's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, Bob. I don't think we know about statutory rape laws in Alaska. Maybe,
actually,
maybe you do.
The other day.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because it was a very. It's a very interesting question.
Okay.
It's 16 or it's younger than 16. It's considered mandatory statutory rape. And age of consent is 16.
16.
So that's not an issue in terms of
right.
Sarah Palin's daughter.
Is that true? What's the standard in other states? Do you know?
It varies. I mean, it all. I believe, as far as I know, that it's all that kind of 16, 17 range. Each state obviously has their own law. It's a state issue, not a federal issue.
Yeah. Pat from St. Paul. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I was my comment. First of all, I want to say about the guy who comments about the fundamentalist. To me, that's so intolerant. You know, and it seems like the fundamentalist Christians seem to get a lot of the bashing and you know, from seemingly so-called tolerant people, which, anyway, that's a different story. My comment is, I really, and I guess I would consider myself independent, leaning towards McCain, but I always like to kind of stay to the very end and look at how, and I'm just trying to look at how they're treating this Palin. And to me, it seems so sexist how they are treating her in comparison with, and I'll say they, I'll include the Obama, even though I saw that comment that he made, and yet what he should have said is to the, you know, to NBC, ABC, CNN, CBS, stop running those stories. If he really wanted to, take, instead of saying they're off limits, speak to him specifically, speak to him strongly. I thought that was the minimum he could do to me, and I've heard a lot of people say it's so wonderful that, you know, he made that comment. To me, it was the weakest comment. And let me say this. Yesterday, I spent a good portion of the day at the state capitol in St. Paul, just kind of watching and observing. And I'm married to my wife is from Central America, and her comment, this is the first election she's gone through, but her comment was how hateful this group of people was that we were watching. Wow, what a bunch of social misfits.
Who were you watching?
This group of protesters at the state capitol. Wow, are they hateful and angry, you know, not angry, because angry is okay, but hateful in just their music, in their literature, in their T-shirts, everything. And if I was McCain, I would get a commercial linking that group that's protesting to Obama. I would try to link that so strongly, because they are definitely pro-Obama.
Professor Ladwig.
Well, there's a lot there. And I guess, first of all, both campaigns, I'm sure, would love to get your phone number if you're an undecided voter waiting for the last minute to decide. But with that being said, I would say you're right to identify that how the media handles Sarah Palin is going to be a tricky issue, and how that then spins off for the Obama campaign. Senator Obama certainly had a lot of experience with these types of problems in terms of his campaign with Hillary Clinton. He probably learned a lot, I'm assuming, through that process in in applying that to how they will both, him and Joe Biden, will both be dealing with the campaign with her on the ticket in the general election. Mm-hmm. But that's a concern, and I mean, obviously he's not responsible for what the media does, and I don't think he can control what they cover. She's such a hot topic right now of conversation that they're going, no matter who says what, they're going to cover in depth. And in some ways, though, that's I would say that's also good. I mean, she's a person that we don't know, going for the second highest office in the land. In some ways, it's responsible that we get to know much more about her and who she is and what her policy stances are. That's absolutely legitimate. But they can't, shouldn't cross the line either. They shouldn't cross the line with anybody.
And the protests, there's another point of view on the protests as well. I was watching a lot of the convention last night, and there's only been minuscule attention paid to the protests. Obviously, people are angry in this country about mm-hmm. the war. They're angry about their personal situations. I mean, there is some anger going on here. But I also have read, and there hasn't been much attention paid, that there was a lot of pepper gas and other things used on protesters who, according to CNN reports, were quite peaceful. They might be angry, but they were peaceful in their protest, and there was question about how much force was used against people. This is America. We have a legitimate right to protest, right?
Absolutely. I'm obviously on both sides. And you can, hold whatever sign you want, or have whatever T-shirt
sure.
you want, play whatever music you
right.
want. That's the First Amendment. That's our right.
Yeah.
You may not like it or not, but that's our right.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest is Professor Jeffrey Ladwig, assistant professor at the University of Connecticut, Department of Political Science, and we are talking about the Republicans' Week to Shine, the speakers at last night's convention, and the much-watched, I'm sure there will be a lot of people watching, Governor Sarah Palin tonight as she gives her address. And we are talking about all of that this hour. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. More phone calls in just one moment. Let's go to another email, Jeffrey. And this is from, hold on, I got to get my... Oh, it's somebody listening from Maine, actually. It's one thing for Ms. Palin to make a choice concerning her own pregnancy and for her daughter to make a choice, too. It's completely another for her to take that choice away from me and my daughter. Let's not forget the next administration will be in a position to appoint Supreme Court justices. That was an issue that Laura Bush brought up last night, actually. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that. Supreme Court justices and how important that will be in people's votes this November.
In terms of, I mentioned before that, the Republican campaign really seems to be turning more towards, character and biography, and that's certainly true. The issues that are brought more front and center, much more so with the pick of Sarah Palin, are these social issues, in particularly abortion. I think the emailer is exactly right to identify that as a debate that's basically has totally been reinvigorated within this campaign and is in a very obviously important issue for both sides. And the more that's brought up, I'm not sure if that's going to help McCain very much. The overall public opinion polls show that the majority of Americans favor some choice, and if she takes a line that is much more strident than that, and that's all the reporting I've seen is basically a zero tolerance in terms of any allowing all abortions. If that's a position that she sticks to, that I don't think that will play very well, and that will be getting quite a bit of attention, I have to assume.
William from Colfax, hi.
Hi. To that caller before about the protesters and the hateful speech, I just like to say I think you should listen to Phyllis Schlafly or Rush Limbaugh. I think they're pretty full of hateful speech. Now, the main comment, really, what I wanted to say about this Sarah Palin is that the whole discussion about her family and all that's one thing, but her ideas, this idea of anti-scientific creationism, intelligent design, all those sort of ideas, drilling for oil when everyone knows that the oil goes into the world market, those type of anti-intellectual ideas are not what we need for this coming century when we're competing with countries like India and China, who aren't caught up in all this sort of thing, who are educating more engineers, more scientists, the sort of thing that we need. And also the separation of church and state. Creationism, whatever you want to think of it, is not science, and it's a religious idea, and it should be taught as religion, and not, you know, those sort of things are more troubling to me than her inexperience or all the other things.
Professor Ladwig.
In terms of the creationism, again, I think that's like the abortion debate will certainly rise up now much more so. That's an issue that probably would never have been addressed if Lieberman or Ridge or Pawlenty were chosen as VP with Palin. That's certainly going to be discussed. And again, I don't think that's going to play necessarily very well for Senator McCain. Her position that creationism ought to be taught side by side with science, regular science, is a that's not a very popular position. And even when they pushed it in Kansas, it actually fell apart on that. They thought they were going to certainly get that through, and it fell apart on them. So I think across the nation, that's also not going to play very well.
Let's go to Rodney. Thanks, William, for your call. Rodney from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have so much to say about this, Sarah Palin, but I wanted to say that during the debates or her speech tonight, whatever she says, people are going to recognize that it's good because nobody's heard her before, low expectations, because it seems like Americans now favor more lower expectations and that somebody did something great when they really didn't. I mean, like her pro-life. To me, these people are not pro-life. They're pro-fetus because after the baby's born, they could care less what happens to it. They could, the baby's poor, ends up getting in trouble, hurting somebody, and then we want to put the baby to death. I mean, the child or the man to death. So, I mean, this whole issue about her being so pro-family and pro-whatever means nothing because one thing she did in Alaska that I read, a line item veto where they wanted to give more money to teen pregnancy for housing, she cut 28% out of the budget. So this all is just, oh, I care about my family only and what my family does. And that's it.
Professor Ladwin.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly been a debate that's been between the Democrats and Republicans for a long time. What does family values mean? What does pro-life mean? And they take different issues or different points on each issue, whether it's, the abortion or issue or afterwards in terms of caring for the poor and the elderly and the sick. I mean, you can obviously have a take on either side. And in I would say both sides are a bit inconsistent in their positions. With that being said, again, I mean, this will be something that comes direct to the fore now in a lot of the debates.
And we go now to, thanks, Rodney, for your call, John from Burlington. Hi, John.
Good morning. I think with this pick, I think it really solidifies my hopes and fears. That whole, the caller kind of ahead of me kind of restated it as well, where the Republicans are banking on that swing voter being a simpleton and someone who's going to look for that average person that, they can relate to. I think we're pretty familiar with that person, and we've had 8 years of that person. And, never mind that, whether they're diplomatic or they know anything, they overwhelm you with their knowledge about things. But if they can, I have a pregnant daughter, I'll vote for her. Instead of saying, enough's enough, I think they could either, take it this way or it could, hopefully it'll come back to haunt them and people will want more out of their president and vice president.
Certainly, again, that's, the Republicans need to switch things away from the record of the policy. I mean, George Bush ran on a platform that was, I'm gonna govern with my gut, and that, I'm the kind of guy you want to have a beer with, basically. And he was elected twice, basically. And if you, and that was very successful for him. So it's strategically, it's not a bad way to go. Whether that's a good way for democracy to choose its leaders or not, I gotta say it probably is not.
We have another email. You may know the name here, except that I'm not sure how to pronounce. Is it Rennie from Appleton? Your sister?
No, Renee.
Renee from Appleton. Could you please, brother, give us some analysis of Lieberman's speech and presence at the convention?
Well, Lieberman that's certainly an issue right now in Connecticut, in his position, you know, supporting McCain. Lieberman's re-election in 2006 obviously went not as he planned. He ran as a Democrat, lost in the primary, and then ran as an independent for the general election and won. And since then, he's had very rough road with the Democratic caucus in the Congress. And with his support of McCain, there's basically no way that he was going to be able to come back and join the Democratic Party as he was probably hoping to. I got to imagine he's been a lifelong Democrat. And at the same time, probably would lose the chairmanship of his congressional committee. So he's all in with McCain, obviously, now, and that's probably good for him as a career move, since, you know, that you would likely get a cabinet position out of it if McCain were to win. But he left a lot of Connecticut Democrats in dismay last night, and not just for his support of McCain. That's been well known, and we've known that for a long time. But his criticism, direct criticism of Obama, and then direct endorsement of Palin, I think came as a pretty big surprise to a lot of people here in Connecticut.
Hmm. And thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Renee.
Yeah. And we go next to Kathy is next from Waupaca. Hi, Kathy.
You rock, Kathleen. Our founding fathers were really brilliant people. They saw the results of endless religious wars and government or state-sponsored religion. And in their First Amendment, they said the government will respect no institution of religion, nor will it discriminate against any. I have no problem with people's beliefs, but I certainly have a problem when they want the rest of us to believe them and want them taught in the school system, which is funded by, quote, my tax money, unquote. And that is the big problem I have with it. They are free to believe what they want. They are not free to force the rest of us to believe in it, too. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Louie next from Wausau. Hi, Louie.
Hi. I ask this question every recent election cycle, and why do you suppose it is that we never see candidates or even political conventions, party conventions, identify with their party? I have seen only one sign at the Democratic convention that said Democratic Party, and none yet with at the Republican convention. And in the olden days, it was Ike for president, Republican, JFK, Democrat, and so on. The politicians don't do that anymore.
No, and it's just, again, a strategic choice. You know, during the primaries, it's all about the Democrats, or it's all about the Republicans, and during the general elections, it's about running to the center. So you want to attract independents and not, you know, shine anyone away because of your particular party labels. You want to, you know, seem as centrist as possible in order to get that median voter. And if you can get the median voter, you win the election. So it's just a strategic decision, I would say.
And thanks very much for the call. Do you know who else? I know that Governor Palin is on for tonight. There seems to be some confusion about who else is speaking, that Giuliani was supposed to, and now I understand he's off the main stage. Is it still in a state of flux?
As far as I know, absolutely. Both the, you know, I think the pick of Palin and then obviously the Hurricane Gustav, I mean, really threw a wrench into, you know, the Republicans' plan for the convention, and, mm-hmm. and has it kind of on the fly, which might be more to, you know, McCain's suiting. It seems like, from everything I understand, that's kind of like the way that he likes to make decisions is a bit more improvisational. So this might be very good for him. I don't, like I said at the beginning of the show, I think it creates a number of messages, which is, I don't think, necessarily good to begin with, but also many of the messages are mixed, and that's certainly not good. So that's I think it's a bit problematic. And plus, I believe that McCain is obviously scheduled to speak on Thursday night, and that's also the beginning of NFL football. So overall, the planning for the RNC convention probably could have been better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll bet a lot of people are going to watch tonight. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we did have an email from somebody who wanted to know about the president's performance last night, where he was placed, what he had to say, how effective he was in about a minute.
I think it's stunning that he was not the keynote speaker for a sitting president to not be the main address of an evening is really a kind of a phenomenal development and speaks loads to the position of the Republican Party in terms of policy, where they are right now and how they want to pivot away from that as quickly as far as possible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us. It's amazing how long this has gone on, isn't it? I mean, I think about it.
It seems like forever.
It does.
Years. It really does.
And it has been. It's been almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Whew, that's a long time. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Professor Jeffrey Ladwig, our guest, assistant professor at the University of Connecticut in the Department of Political Science, teaches courses on the U.S. Congress and the presidency, the American political economy, and American political parties, and did his undergraduate work at UW-Madison. We thank him for being with us this hour of the program. We have a slightly different schedule as well this week. Tom Ashbrook's show is in St. Paul at the Republican National Convention, so we're carrying that program live at 9 o'clock each morning of the week, and then we're joining you with all kinds of information and analysts to respond to what you heard and what you will hear. And we'll do the same tomorrow, so we'll be on the air at 10 o'clock tomorrow with analysis, certainly of Governor Sarah Palin's much-anticipated and I'm sure much-watched and listened-to address. And On Point is also broadcasting at 6 o'clock this evening. We'll have a special and then coverage of the Republican National Convention from National Public Radio. So be sure and stay tuned for all that's coming up politically. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda for on-air production as well. Thanks also for all of your calls and interest in the political scene. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.